Welcome to the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
As Selma says at the beginning of all of these recordings, welcome to the SBGAN podcast. Yes, it's another of our series of interviews obtained at the sponsoring organization's annual meeting in Helsinki. And today we'll be talking with Heather Norris from Bristol. Ms. Norris trained as a dietitian. She went slightly off-piste with 2 years of education in youth work and theology, something that might be interesting to get into a little bit later. But thereafter, she returned to first pediatric nutrition, and then for the last 15 years in neonatal nutrition, where she's been working particularly in the last 5 of those years with the complicated patients born prematurely or having undergone surgical modification of the gut. She'll be sharing with us today her insights into approaches to those patients' care, addressing several questions. What are the particular nutritional challenges following surgery in neonates? How does one know when to restart enteral nutrition, what feeds to choose, and how best to advance enteral nutrition after gastrointestinal surgery in neonates? And in what does effective management consist, yielding optimal outcomes for families and infants? In looking through the materials that Ms. Norris has supplied, I was really struck by how little seems systematically to be known about what to do. Surgery has moved ahead of the ancillary disciplines that support the patients. And how best to support those patients is, well, it's complicated. So I think it's time to let Heather get on with it. Welcome, and what do you want to talk about?
Thanks, Alex. It's difficult. There's so much to talk about. I think one of the first things to start off the conversation would be just to discuss what are the particular challenges post-surgery for preterm infants from a nutritional point of view. And I think if you ever listen to any nutritional lectures or talks about preterm nutrition, you'll often hear the phrase that preterm birth is, it's a nutritional emergency. And if you think about the rapid amount of growth that normally happens in the third trimester, and then think about an infant then who's born during that phase, then they obviously haven't had opportunity for that rapid growth. And that's where a lot of brain growth happens. One of my favourite slides is from a study where it shows a cross-section of the brain where you can see how smooth the brain is, you know, up to 28 weeks, and then that rapid development up until term where it looks more like a cauliflower or a walnut, you know, the cortical folds that develop. And that illustrates to me just that great development that happens. Because obviously neurodevelopmental outcomes are going to be the priority that we're wanting to achieve during that time. And then add to that the other growth that we need with lean muscle mass and to lay down fat stores. So it's already a nutritional emergency where we need to try to replicate that growth ex utero with the complications of neonatal intensive care on top of that that create additional challenges. And then you layer again then on top of that surgery and the additional challenges that may come on that when there's been gut resection, then I think that just conveys a little bit of the challenge that we have.
It's really amazing that any of them get out of the NICU, isn't it?
Yeah, it can take a long time sometimes.
Well, let's start off with the idea of the principal challenges that a prematurely born infant may face, aside from simply getting enough hay into the barn to last over the winter of the rapid growth of the first year, is necrotizing enterocolitis versus gut perforation. Aren't there differences in the approach to nutrition in those two conditions?
Yeah. There's a lot of difference, really, with the approach, but sometimes it can be quite difficult to distinguish between the two and to find clarity in diagnosis. I think typically it's very quite difficult to diagnose necrotizing enterocolitis, because that is a challenge in itself. And then thinking about the differences between those two. And in terms of impact on the infant, then there's a huge difference, because with necrotizing enterocolitis, we're going to have a huge amount of inflammation and potentially larger amounts of necrotic gut and impact of that. And whereas with the focal intestinal perforation, it's got a completely different etiology. And so there's obviously differences in recovery and perhaps when you might think about enteral feeds and potential tolerance of those feeds as well. Mm-hmm. So that's quite important to establish. But I don't, looking at, and this paper from Mo et al. That I'd sent to you about the nutritional management after either necrotizing enterocolitis or focal intestinal perforation, it just shows that there's no good quality evidence or nutritional standards after treating either infants who'd had medical NEC or surgical NEC or focal intestinal perforation. And so it's quite difficult, really, when there's no evidence for how best to progress either of those two conditions, to actually have a consensus and some standard pathways. In practice, I think there's often a call for creating guidelines and standards for people to follow, just to give consistency of practice. But I find in practice there's so much difference in clinical condition between the infants and the pathways that you know, there may be some who are greatly more sick than others.
It's all bespoke.
Yeah, and so it is quite difficult to create guidelines and a consensus. And so it doesn't really surprise me that there's a lack of evidence, because it's very difficult to conduct research in this population as well, from an ethical point of view, and having the numbers required to have significant outcomes.
But are efforts underway to collect such evidence, to organise such studies, perhaps through SBN?
Yeah, I've heard of the BAPM, which is the British Association of Perinatal Medicine, and they're just creating a neonatal surgical interest group, which is
Brand, first good step.
Yeah, it's brand new. And so I think there is efforts to collect together. And interestingly, we've just created a surgical interest group on our neonatal unit, and we're just confirming some funding for specialist nurses, the surgical, to have some dedicated time to focus on trying to improve or look at all of our processes and outcomes, and just to see if we can pull together and do something on a local level.
And indeed, one of the references that you sent me, and I'm pointing out for the folks at home, that these references are available or are listed in the cover letter, you might call it, the cover sheet that will accompany the website version of this chat. So, folks, you can go and follow, get some follow-up, get deeper into these topics if you just have a shifty. One of those references I was saying, actually, it presents some of the first work of that interest group, does it not?
So which reference was that you were referring to?
Well, let me take a quick look. I'm thinking of the Framework for Practice, Holistic Feeding and Nutritional Management for the Near-Term Score Term Neonate Following Bowel Surgery. That was published less than a year ago.
That's right, and it's a fantastic piece of work. And when you look at the list of the authors and the contributors to that, it's really encouraging to see that it represents right across the multidisciplinary team. In the last few years, we've had a lot more funding in the UK for allied health professionals, because there's obviously was a disparity across units as to access to allied health professionals. And so we've got a lot more involvement now with speech and language therapists, occupational therapists, physiotherapists. And you can just then see how important it is that they all work together. And this framework is, well, it's entitled, it's a holistic treatment with the focus on families as partners in care. And it's really important that is at the heart of the work that's done. And I think I shared this framework because it really echoes those principles. And I think in the light of the fact that we really don't have very much evidence and everything needs to be bespoke, the focus is very much on collaboration and communication. And I think allied health professionals are also then in a unique position where they can work across all of the different professionals and be the link between those professionals sometimes, and bringing together all of the different professionals involved and medics that are involved with gastroenterologists, surgeons, neonatologists. And so there's a lot of different people that can work together. And I think that's going to be the best way to improve outcomes by working together and creating careful feeding plans just to try to improve outcomes. Because when you think then about what needs to happen, not only do we not have enough evidence about when to restart feeds, we've got to think about the right feeds to start and what's going to bring the most benefit. And it's going to be no surprise that, as we know, that mother's own milk is the gold standard, it's the biological norm. And preterm infants can benefit hugely more from preterm. Preterm infants can benefit hugely more from mother's own milk to reduce some of the risks of some of the negativities or the challenges of prematurity, such as retinopathy of prematurity, and it can help with gut maturation. And so if you translate that across to the surgical infant, then you can see how breast milk is important with helping gut adaptation and healing and actually establishing an absorbability, as well as the macronutrients and the micronutrients and the biologically active components of breast milk as well. So it's this multidisciplinary team that then is really important to try and help facilitate that, because mothers of preterm infants have huge challenges then in that artificial environment to express and maintain their lactation supply. And that's the beauty of this document, where it brings all of that together and how we can work well to try to facilitate that with the challenges that we're going to have with our surgical infants.
Well, I like that in particular because, although to someone with my mindset, the work by Mo et al. Is particularly meaty in setting out the laundry list of complications that these children face and the problems that they face, how to deal with them effectively is really much more down the alley of that holistic feeding and nutritional management pamphlet that you've recommended. I'm not asking you to be an expert on what's going on throughout Europe, but the purpose of ESPGAN is in part cross-border networking, learning from others so that each country doesn't have to invent the bicycle over and over again. And in this respect, are Britons out ahead of the pack, or is this an approach that's been taken, for example, in the Scandinavian countries? Are there models on which you are shaping, on models that already exist on which this sort of work can be shaped, can be learned from?
I really wouldn't know necessarily about what's happening in those countries, but what I do feel that in the UK particularly, and just talking with colleagues, I have a colleague who is a Finnish dietitian and others that might work in other countries in Europe. And I think...
You're thinking Anna Walker, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, she's quite unique in that she's Finnish, but she's worked in the UK for a while. Interesting to hear her take on it, because then she can see the differences between the two. And she did her dietetic training in Finland as well. But I think the feeling that I get is that the setup in the UK is quite unique in from an allied health professional point of view, and the work that is happening together. And I think that we should be at the forefront of work from that perspective. And there's not that I know of in any other countries where work happens quite in the same way.
Well, this meeting in Helsinki is a particularly good opportunity to compare, to contrast, and to take the first steps toward multinational attempts or, again, multinational standardization of approaches, or so it seems to me. Well, what else would you like to talk about? I'm going to go back to the fact that you dropped out of dietetics and spent 2 years training in theology. Tell me a little bit about that and how that has informed your approach to your professional work thereafter.
I was volunteering as a youth worker in my local church. And I was working as a dietitian alongside that, because it was just a voluntary work that I did. And I think what really struck me was the relationships I was able to develop with young people, and just the profound impact that investing in their time had on their lives, and the feedback that you would get from young people. And I think sometimes in healthcare, it can be a struggle to make a difference when you're working, this is not with neonates, but perhaps working with children or families or with adults, where you're specifically trying to make a change in one area of their life, which is actually impacted by so many other factors. So then you're, say, for example, if you're working in weight management or diabetes, you're working in a very specific area, but their food choices and lifestyle choices are influenced by so much more than that. And I think that was what I enjoyed so much more about youth work, was that you can then get more involved in the driving factors perhaps behind some of those choices, and influence things on a deeper level, and particularly from a theological point of view as well, with that connection with the church youth work. And so I volunteered for a while, and then I started thinking perhaps I want to get more involved with that. And so then I went to train for 2 years, and I did, alongside that, it's very practical. I worked in a local church up on the Wirral, which is near Liverpool, and for the duration of the course as well. And then I did work for perhaps probably about 6 years altogether as a youth worker in a detached project, which means that we're working with young people on the streets in Manchester in quite challenging areas, so that then we could then develop relationships with them and then work on to work with projects with them, where they may not be able, you couldn't work with them, they wouldn't access a youth project in a building before you'd actually develop relationships with them. But as time went on, it was more difficult then to marry, and I had small young children, to marry the youth work with having a young family. And I started thinking perhaps about going back to being a paediatric dietitian. But I think all of those skills and experiences have stayed with me, and then you take that and use it to inform your practice. And it's quite interesting that actually now, with the work that I do on the neonatal unit and the avenue of some of this work with this holistic framework, where they're thinking perhaps more about those interpersonal relationships and the family being important, that ethos that I have, and as a dietitian being in the multidisciplinary team, I think you just bring that collaboration with you, and it's just that same ethos or value that just has come with me throughout.
It's a grand perspective that you're able to contribute there, and it reminds all of us that there are many interlocking, interbraided ways of being of service, which is kind of what healthcare is all about, isn't it? Well, we've run out of time, sadly. There's more to talk about, but it's time to ask you, as you know, these podcasts generally end with the request that the person being interviewed share with us the title of a song that makes a particular difference to him or her. Those songs, by the way, if you haven't already sought them out, folks at home, are available through Spotify, the Espigan Favorite Songs, and I recommend a visit there, again, to the folks at home. What do you recommend to us here?
Yeah, it's difficult to think of just one particular song. There's always, you have a song for each day of the week, but I just like to suggest a song which is a favourite of mine. It's by a band called Elbow, and it's called One Day Like This. And it's just a really uplifting anthem and something that's really going to bring cheer if you listen to that, to encourage you.
I don't know it yet, but I'm sure that I soon shall. Heather, thank you for a lovely chat. And thanks again to the folks at home who have been kind enough to listen to us.
Thank you for inviting me.